Archie Carras eyed the field of green felt that seemed to stretch out beyond the horizon. He could feel the sweat skitter from his brow all the way down his arm to the plastic dice clutched at the end of his fingers. How did he get here? The night had begun with a plea at the foot of a friend and a $10,000 loan quickly following. A rush of desert wind, a blink of neon later, and Archie rolled into the Vegas night, chasing that endorphin rush over the green horizon. He was a juggernaut. That is how he got here. He was a sweaty, bowling ball of cash crashing through pins made of poker table suckers. 20 million later, he was at the big boy table, the place where Lady Luck herself goes to gamble. The craps. He stared across that green horizon, cocking back his loaded hand. When it would move forward again, it would be worth $100,000, wrapped up in the whim of chaotic forces. It was all in the roll of the dice. Hey everybody, this is InfoCast 5000, the podcast where we dive into the history of things familiar to everybody. Join us as we try to figure out why everything exists.
And I am your host, Sam Acuff.
That is Sam Acuff. I am Baron Malley, the other host, ready to take you on a sultry journey, I believe.
Today.
A sensual journey.
We're talking... Really? Today, we're talking about dice, which turns Baron on. Dice and their forerunners are the oldest gaming implements known to man. The ancient eyes of the dice have seen technology advance from stone tools to smartphones. They have witnessed empires rise and fall, civilizations come and go, rulers reign and perish. Like many other staples of society, dice have come to know that to maintain longevity, you must also possess adaptability. What we now occasionally think of in passing thought as simple cubes that generate random numbers have gone through many iterations over thousands of years, weaving their way into society and taking whatever shape was needed. Dice are the manifestation of our outward search for answers to questions unknown. They have held positions as salient as rancor between gods and mortals, to more colloquial roles as a fundamental element for games of chance and possibly even the foundation of currency as we know it today. Join us as we try to figure out why dice exist.
There is a question mark in the void of history as to which group of people came up with the idea of throwing dice first. They're one of those anomalies that blip into the collective unconscious, suddenly, manifesting in several cultures all around the world, completely independent of one another, which happens over the span of thousands of years from the Bronze Age to 1st century BCE during the Trojan War.
Frankly, more studious individuals than ourselves have been trying to pinpoint exactly when dice may have originated, and they're still working on it. And we may actually never know, and that's a bummer, but it's also fascinating. Because it's not necessarily because of any archaeological shortcomings. It has as much to do with what actually defines what we consider dice. That's where we start to get into the good stuff. And I promise this is not going to go into like a big philosophical question of what is dice. You'll kind of know what we mean.
Dice.
What is a dice? You'll see kind of more what we mean in a bit. For today, we almost exclusively rather think of dice as generally being used to generate a random numerical outcome. But if you travel back about 4,000 years, some of the earliest die attributed to an ancient people that lived during what is referred to, as I have it here, as the Timber Grave period, which is just a cool name, in the region that is now Kazakhstan, is probably what's more pertinent to everyone listening, appear to have had pictograms of them that failed to resemble any numerical ideograms of the time. They don't have anything written on them that is known to resemble a number. Like, there's nothing in the historical findings that we found that have pictograms just being an image that represents something to represent a number. So we know dice as having numbers. So what did these dice do?
Well, this dice right here,
if not predict a number.
I drew a woodchuck. Numbers. I drew a woodchuck on this dice.
You rolled woodchuck.
And on this side?
That means right you here. That means you marry daughter. And I get woodchuck.
Dice, as we've talked about, they've played a lot of roles in ancient society. One of the most prominent is astrogalomancy, which is a form of divination that uses dice to tell the future. Numbers or ideograms on the dice were associated with different implications or letters to form words that had a bearing on questions asked by the diviner. There are many ways to interpret the die in astrogalomancy. Another way of interpreting is to read the position of the dice once they come to rest, the nature of the upward pointing side, or from the arrangement formed upon a formal pattern or grid in a similar fashion, which is known as geomancy. So more or less, you can use any randomized outcome that you can conceive of to aggregate more interpretation. So basically, you can just let it, it's whatever the fuck you want.
Ancestor said woodchuck. Now you give me woodchuck.
I honestly came in here to see if I could get a homeowners association.
Oh, this
pass
is
to build my hut out in
this is astrologomancy.
Yeah.
Locate out service.
Can you ask the gods, maybe, like, is that field over there that I'm going to build my hut, is that going to flood?
Oh, hold on, let me see.
Yeah.
Woodchuck. Basically, yes. So in essence, what I'm getting at is these dice were used like a Ouija board. They were used originally to communicate with the dead, with the gods, with any other extra dimensional entity you could think of. And I think the pictograms were representations of futures. You know, I am completely making this up, but like a wheat symbol might mean good harvest or whatever. A boar would be good hunt, or a skull would be you're going to die and join the people on the other side of these dice, maybe, you know?
Mm-hmm. Or you might turn into a woodchuck, or you might befriend a woodchuck, or you...
Woodchuck wasn't really on the dice, Baron.
That was a gag that we did. Really want it to be.
That wasn't...
I think the greatest part about all this astrogalomancy is that the Greeks would use it and they would come up with these disjointed third-person messages from the other gods that would say something like...
I remember you were telling me about this. Yeah,
Zeus likes peanuts. And you kind of have to... It's up to you to kind of figure out what Zeus is trying to say to you, you know, during this whole time.
I think he's just saying that Zeus likes peanuts.
But is that Zeus saying it, or is that, you know, another supernatural?
Or that just like snowballs into some really fucked up decree where if you're allergic to peanuts, you're like a witch and they burn you.
I don't know how you jump that track.
That's how history works, buddy.
Fair enough. So if we're staying on brand and we're talking to with ghost talking and fortune telling, something that we have neglected to mention up until this point is in almost every historical documentation, astrogalomancy was performed with knuckle bones of various quadrupeds. These knuckle bones were cube-like in shape and could be painted or carved to have different identifications on each side or the first dice. Astragalus, which is what they were called, have been found in ancient cultures spanning the globe from Greece to Egypt to even ancient Native American tribes.
With all due respect, I think if we left it there, that would not really be answering the question of why bones. It's certainly suggestible that it'd be just as easy to fashion something comparable from stone or wood to do the same thing that a bone would do to tell you the future.
Yeah, but bones. Those aren't bones.
Bones.
Historical.
Bones.
Bones are more fun. Written historical texts on the topic.
I want to play with bones, Baron.
Written historical texts on the topic and of shamanistic practices from the Bronze Age forward tell us that magic and astrogali were deeply intertwined. So a burgeoning agricultural society, to them, the bone was viewed as the life force of the animal. So it was an object that was inhabited by mystical energy that could perhaps be a communication bridge to whatever god your group happened to be worshiping at the time. So symbolically, the bone was a metaphor for life and fertility And the ironic thing being that you probably had to kill whatever animal the boat belonged to to get.
I don't think the animals shared that holistic view of their knuckle bones. Or, you know what? Put a spin on it. Just a bunch of sheep walking around without feet.
Ooh, maybe they had like little sheep shoes. Little sheep boots.
No, no. And not to put too fine of a point on it, but the importance of the bone factor can even be derived from the etymology of the word itself. The first half of the word astragalomancy refers to the astragalus bone, more commonly referred to as the ankle bone. We kind of just, you know, we said that already, but this is just for the etymological purposes. And mancy, by the way, which is, I didn't know this, which means the divination by means of.
Or the girl that I took to prom.
Or her name was Mancy.
Mancy, the dance.
Were you trying to get to Dancy Mancy?
I don't know what
that
I
sounds
was
a lot like my
do.
High school girlfriend, but mine was Fancy Mancy. You had Dancy Mancy.
I don't know why I think this is so funny, but it is.
Put together divination by means of ankle bone is what astragalomancy means.
Throwing them bones.
Divination by means of ankle bone. That's so funny. That's not funny to you?
Well, I think the weirder implication is that somebody at some point found a bunch of bones along the way and decided to, I guess, throw them. And they decided, like, this was the best way to achieve the outcome that they wanted, which was random numerical showings upon these bones.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, the earliest ones weren't numerical. The earliest ones were just...
Right.
Like,
but you know, it's the same kind of thing, though. Like, I am still having trouble in my mind trying to figure out how you get from point A to point B. And, you know, it's like one of those
why
things.
Why use rocks or wood, even, if you could use bones...
The answer as to what dice are and what they were used for, it's not a totally neat wound up package where you could say that dice were definitely this or dice were definitely that. There was a deep interconnected web linking all the different facets of ancient society, all involving dice, from religion to currency and to gaming. But as time moves forward and society progresses, there becomes a greater role for these harbingers of... you like that?
That's good.
You like that?
Yeah.
For these harbingers of chance to be played in the form of games. One of the oldest board games known to us from ancient Egypt is known as Senet. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You probably not.
The rules are fairly similar to backgammon, and historians believe that the game had a heavy connection to the Egyptian mythological journey to the underworld, the aim of each player being to move their pieces around a board made up of three rows, each row made up of 10 squares, for a journey of 30 squares total while avoiding hazards and your opponent's pieces. Watch out. So each of these squares had a different hieroglyph on it, mm-hmm. right? And one of them... was they all had wacky names. Like one of them was the pit of everlasting life.
Yeah.
And one of them was like the sky of eternal chaos, like shit like that. So
I don't even want to talk about the worst one. Woodchuck.
The woodchuck. Woodchuck. You don't want to land on woodchuck. You don't want to land on.
They fucking cut your hand off if you land on woodchuck.
If you could do all this and you could win the game, then that was considered to be good luck. And good luck was a blessing from the gods. And the winner was the first to pass into the afterlife by getting all their pieces on the board. Yay!
So you win by dying? The goal was to die.
Egyptians were weird, man. So where fate met gameplay is that the movement of your pieces were determined by the random numbers generated by whatever dice you happen to have handy. Most of the Egyptians, that would be a throw stick, which is...
It was a dice. Yeah, it was a die. In essence. You showed me a picture. It counts.
Yeah. Yeah. They were basically these flattened out.
Again, we're getting into the philosophical question of what is a die? Like, are we talking about modern die or are we talking about something that like randomly generates an outcome when you throw it? That's what we're talking about. This is a stick with numbers on it.
It's not a bone.
It's a long dice. It's a long die.
It is. So they were throw sticks. Ancient Egyptians also had the first D20s.
Yeah, actually. I saw that.
Which was crazy. Which looked pretty much exactly like the D20s you would see in a D&D game.
What else are you gonna do about it?
I don't know.
Or, you know,
I'm not a dice expert.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
To the ancient Egyptians, even though dice had evolved beyond just a means of communicating with the other realms, they still had the strong aura of mysticism and otherworldly power, which was a vehicle used to demonstrate the will of the gods through the means of chance. And moving forward to the times of ancient Greece, new games emerge as well as new constructs, such as gambling. Despite the idea of chance being closely connected with the whim of the gods to this point in time, some historians state that gambling becomes a divergent path from that ideal. And gambling was definitely present in ancient Greece. However, there were split opinions as to which activities of this kind should be forbidden or not.
Maybe it was troublesome to bring up gambling so early. I know we had planned to, and that's just kind of how it worked out. But gambling is going to come up a lot, and it's going to get even more important as we go forward. But I do think it started in Greece. You know, maybe not.
I'll bet you 20 woodchucks it didn't.
That's not how woodchucks work. You don't understand.
I'm gambling Pete. I love to gamble.
You're so bad at it. Hence how you lost on AMC stock.
You want to buy some stock?
It's interesting and it's important and it's funny how integral it is to the development of dice that gambling should arise. I think this is where you were going, but many Greek philosophers strongly opposed the idea of gambling and even claimed that the activity would become a plague. Yeah.
Yeah. Which actually, you did more research on that than I did because I don't.
I fell into a gambling hole. Most references to any game of chance in any Greek literature are often paired with rage and conflict.
It sucks!
Yeah, basically. For example, in the very first appearance of any game of chance in Greek literature, Patroclus, who's one of the characters in these stories, becomes incensed when playing knucklebones. Spoiler alert, he loses. And then as a result, he kills Amphidamas. Not Amphidamas, but Amphidamas' son. It was supposedly an accident, but I mean, I think that that's a bit of a stretch.
So nevertheless, whether they liked it or not, gambling had not one, but two gods on its side, which were Hermes and Pan, which were important figures also in Greek mythology, who were known of taking part in the gambling arts.
Yeah, so like it or not, the gods gambled, and some stories even mention Hades, Poseidon, and Zeus throwing dice in order to split the universe between them. This is essentially the story of the creation of the universe. Apparently, by virtue of the dice, is how Zeus won the heavens, and then Poseidon won the sea, and I guess Hades lost, and he got the underworld, although in all Greek mythology, Hades sounds like the cool place, so really, he kind
of
won.
While we're on the subject, though, of knuckle bones, historians speculate that games such as quote-unquote knuckle bones where game pieces are exchanged upon victory may have set the framework for modern currency, which was like what was knuckle bones.
People are probably more familiar with like jacks or pogs if we're going to be more contemporary. I mean I played pogs. Did you play pogs?
No, pogs. I never played pogs. Never got the pog phrase.
I was young enough to I'm old enough to have pogs, but young enough that I didn't know what the fuck to do with pogs. I just collected them and never. Like I was that weird age, and I think the same way with Pokemon cards, where like it was too complex for me to understand how to play Pokemon, but I just would collect them, and then older kids would trick me into trading my valuable Pokemon for shitty Pokemon.
That's what I did with Magic, pretty much.
Yeah,
like the same thing. Yeah, because I got into Magic when I was like 10.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Look at us.
So
movers and shakers.
All being duped, you know, still being duped today.
But so
don't get your financial advice on
Well,
on
we are not a financial
media.
Advice podcast. But yeah, so basically it was pogs but with bones. You know who I bet invented that?
don't
it's me, Mr. Bones. I'm here for your bones. I'm back, baby.
You are not touching my bones.
That's not how knuckle bones is played, I'm afraid. No, put down your juicy bones because it is bone time.
Juicy bones. So knuckle
don't
bones.
Roll woodchucks.
Ooh, double woodchucks. You don't want to get that. So knuckle bones, that was basically the big game that was being played in Greece at this time, right? That was the number one. If you wanted to gamble with somebody, it was knuckle bones.
Not
right?
necessarily. So I think sometimes they just bet on the outcomes of die. Because knuckle bones, not to completely contrast you here, but knuckle bones is more of a game of chance. Not a game of chance. It's actually more of a game of skill. Like jacks or pogs. It's like a sleight of hand, quick reflexes kind of thing. But it does have the same spirit of a game of chance where, you know, you're betting things. You're waging your bones against the other person's. I love
like if
this bone economy that we are kind of like painting the picture of.
But that so knuckle bones, that was one of the games that was being played
in
this Mediterranean ancient Bronze Age region. So, yeah, so you had all these bones from playing knuckle bones and then you could put them in a pot. And you could save them, or you could go to the market and you could spend them on candy, maybe, if that's something that you enjoyed.
Bones for candy. That's like some hipster fucking make-it-yourself candy store in Hamden, you know, where you spend $20 on a piece of toffee.
See, I took that in a totally morbid direction where it was some kind of, like, I don't know, like dystopian world where you went in
like Soylent Green where you turned your grandparents into candy.
Yeah
Well, I was thinking maybe it's like a you know, kind of like a hipstery way to be buried where your loved ones can turn you into candy. What am I saying? That's not hipster. I want to be turned into candy. Now that's kind of cool.
I would eat you.
What kind of candy would you? Shut up. What? No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Ew, gross.
Who else is going to do it? You think Geneva's going to do it?
That's true. That's true. You would be.
I ate blood one time.
Oh, fuck. Are we talking about that?
We don't have to.
Are we talking about that?
No. I'm using that as
we're talking about that.
To say that, no, because there's no way we can fit into this podcast right now. Maybe 30 minutes.
I can sum it up pretty quickly.
We can talk about, because you don't know the whole story. You don't have the justification.
How about this? I'm going to tell my part where I got a text that you woke up, you got so drunk that you missed a knife fight that happened in your living room. You woke up, you said, hey, it looks like someone spilt ketchup or pasta maybe all over the kitchen. I said, that looks like blood. You sent me photos through text.
You did not say that.
I said, it kind of looks like blood. And then you said, I'm going to taste it.
No.
And then you did.
That's not everything that happened, bro.
And then we found out it was your roommate's blood from a knife fight.
That's not everything that went down.
All right. What's the next part? Let's keep going.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm cutting all that shit out.
No, do not. Do not cut it. That is good.
If you won't let me tell my side of the story,
we only got so much time.
I know
we're
saving it for dirty bits. That's what I'm saying.
No.
We shouldn't have gotten into it,
Baron. How about you defend yourself in dirty bits?
We'll see.
All right, Baron's gonna defend himself in dirty bits.
Unlike frozen blood cakes on the floor, money is, in and of itself, a pretty abstract concept to Bronze Age humans. We're jumping back into how bones were possibly
nice
used
tie-in.
As currency.
That was good. That was smooth.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Money was kind of abstract to Bronze Age humans, and even more abstract the further back that you go, because primitive money is a complex occurrence that's extremely hard to define with very stretchable qualifications due to many individual interpretations of what it could possibly be, so which they use interchangeably with primitive money, like Shannon Einzing of Hartford University, that defines primitive money as the following.
A unit or an object conforming to a reasonable degree to some standard of uniformity, which is employed for reckoning or for making a large proportion of the payments customary in the community concerned, and which is accepted in payment largely with the intention of employing it for making payments.
And others identify these objects of ancient monies as mediums of exchange, like Richard Holmgren does in his paper titled Money on the Hoof, which we pulled a lot of our information on this segment out of. And others describe it as commodity money.
Yeah, if you need good material for, like, if this part, just heads up, this is probably the most interesting part of dice. Like, I think more or less everyone could have kindly guessed, shut up.
I think we fought about whether this.
Okay, we'll get into that in dirty. We will get into that in dirty bits.
Okay,
but more or less, I think everyone could have foreseen maybe the early days of dice. I think like the pictograms and the divination is maybe in, like the most interesting thing to come out of left field that most people probably didn't know. But these earlier versions of board games and gambling probably could have been, you know.
Inferred.
But this currency, how it ties in with modern day currency is fascinating. And
well, it's crazy in the sense that is not only dice worthy this way to communicate with the gods and also be this social aspect, like, you know, you go and you play dice games with your best friend Bone Phil.
Better name for my character than Mr. Bones. Okay. All right. No, that's fine. Just throw that out there this late in the episode. It's cool.
Okay, so you've got this religious, you've got this social aspect. Also, it's the foundation of what we know as currency, which is like one of the biggest
constructs that we live with
that
today.
Society
yeah.
revolves
that moves,
around.
That moves society. What? Yeah. Dice is like this huge unspoken cornerstone of like most of the constructs that people live and die by. Like wars are waged over money. People die for money. People sacrifice so much for money. And dice was like such a big part of that. And so many other constructs like divination. So sorry, we are going on a tangent here, but we just didn't want to undersell how interesting of a topic this really was. Commodity money is money whose value comes from the commodity of which it is made. So this is, again, we're just to bring it all back, to rope it all back in, we're talking about how primitive money kind of got a start and more specifically dice. So commodity money consists of objects having an intrinsic value as well as their value in buying goods. For example, other things believed to be used as commodity goods around the Mediterranean during this era were like bronze rings and axe blades, because there's usefulness in those, and they're something that you could reproduce fairly easily. And people debate over whether the weight of them had something to do with their value, yada yada. But more or less, the takeaway is people use axe blades. You can cast a bunch of bronze axe blades. They're kind of, they all look the same. They're like money. You can use them as money. Like you can trade something for 3 axe blades, and that's kind of where we get commodity money from.
I don't want axe blades. I want woodchucks.
Well,
how many woodchucks you got?
We're not a woodchuck based economy here, so I don't want to have to get into the exchange rate of woodchucks to axe blades. I don't think you could afford these axe blades for the amount of. I can physically see how many woodchucks that you have in your knapsack.
My house is filled with woodchucks.
Well, we're not talking about the woodchucks at your house, are we, buddy? You're far away from home, and
chucking wood mixed in with these axe blades and these bronze rings, though, were cowrie shells, which is a really good example of successful primitive money, and they were used on almost all continents. And again, I think the interesting part of that, because we were talking about at the beginning how dice were all almost simultaneously
so
used
for
the same
purposes.
It was
either an ideology that was transferred from, you know, civilization to civilization, or everyone came up with it at the same time.
Or both, telepathy.
Or all three options are fascinating. And so although we don't really have direct evidence that it was used as literal money, it's not unlikely that it was to some capacity used for what we'd recognize today as modern money. You know, and again, we're getting into the philosophy of what is money. But if we're going to use money as the definition that is used for commodity money or whatever definition you hold of money, something that's exchanged for goods, dice were that. We have enough evidence to say with some confidence, or at least people smarter than us do, that it was used as currency, if that's the definition that you were going to give to currency.
Yeah, like, and you want to see these titties? Give me some bones.
Jesus, Baron. Bone Phil's not into that shit, okay? That's not how Bone Phil likes to spend his bones.
That's what I'm selling this beautiful body for.
And so it's when society began monetizing the astragalus that we start to make the separation of mortal chance from spiritual divination. And this is a huge pivot too. This is another pivot. We're coming at you pivot after pivot of dice history here.
So to try to keep things in perspective, we also have to know that money was often rooted in ancient religion. So
right.
That might seem ridiculous until you look at the many roots money had in religion. And I'm not talking about the 5 degrees of the Illuminati eye above the pyramid. What I'm talking about is like
very practical reasons that religions needed money, like before money, because religions were pre-money, and then religions needed something that resembled money, and like they didn't have a word for it, but they basically created money. And I think that's what you're getting into. Sorry.
Yeah. But. Yeah. There were standardized objects that could be used as offerings for the gods. And in many cultures, the making of money was dedicated to the supernatural powers of these gods, as money was both significant and powerful, and it was many times seen as a blessing from these gods. So if you were going to make money, like, it, for example, in ancient Greek society, you might ask Hermes, who was the god of currency, to bless you in your endeavors.
Jumping around a bit there, but basically, like, we've created... Some society with some religion, we're not saying any specific one, but these are like historical references to religions that did create things that resembled money. Like they created this thing that you could exchange for goods and you could give to the gods. So now that thing that they are looking at as currency has a power. And that's so crazy, like not to be so cliche as to say like money is your god, you know, or like we worship money, but it kind of is all connected. In terms of practical transitions of what became money, I think some of these cultures took those objects thought to have these magical or spiritual attributes assigned to them, and then over time and generations just began to adopt them to function as money. Like these objects gained some significance, and that significance maintained no matter what you were, no matter what god you were attributing them to, and they just maintained to be this stand-in for commodity, or simply a need for currency birthed from religion is another way to look at it. Like the establishment of fines for breaking taboos, like that you couldn't barter your way out of your taboos, I guess, and you just needed some kind of standardized currency. You had to pay X amount of axe heads or woodchucks for saying a swear word, or you had to pay to attend a religious rites, causing the need for standardized unit of money as well.
And it's crazy, right? Because churches, they need money to survive now, and we got to give them money, you know? Exactly. Like you got to go to church on Sunday, you got to put that coin in that collection plate.
What's the deal with religion? Am I right?
I guess it became like this weird Ouroboros of like religion created money, and then religion also needs money.
No. Well, it's not that religion needs money, it's that people want money, and people run religion. So yeah. But over, you know, but back to the money. So people were charging money for attending religious rites. They were charging money because you said a swear word or you adulterated or whatever. And again, people ran religions. People like money. So they just made up this, sorry, like to offend anyone, but people made up these bullshit reasons to give money for this made up god in the sky. But over time, this marriage of games of chance and this religion money made us think about fate differently. Remember, at its inception, astragalus were a tool of divination. They had a holy connotation. Well, not necessarily holy, but a spiritual connotation. And ancient divination still has a lot in common with today's definition of fate. For some, the gods are ever-present, whether we're talking about the craps tables in Atlantic City or playing Sinet in ancient Egypt. However, there was a significant aspect of the ancient games that developed concurrently with people's belief of higher power and took its own direction away from the religious sphere. And this concerns gambling, like we were talking about earlier, and where it's coming back now. These early games of chance, one could say, combine the human playing instinct with the desire of knowing their own destiny, kind of taking away from what role spirituality is supposed to fill and filling it in with an ability to take your destiny in your own hands. There's still the chance aspect. It is in this way that games with dice held a natural link to the powers of both imagination and religious actions. The game was not only an interaction between the participants, but also lended itself to the powers that we cannot control. So I'm taking you on a wild ride here, but you're connecting yourself to the other player. It's a very mortal connection, but then also this like divine connection. However, the most restricted sense of gambling is in its characteristics of a contract between two or more participants, again, rooted in the mortal. And for these stakes to have been met, we needed an exchange of money. And that's where we come back to the astragalus or other valuables between the contestants after somebody had won. And in this case, the astragalus or the dice were both the game and the valuables. And that's more or less how dice came to be.
And that is how dice and woodchucks are connected.
That is dice. We are not signing off like that. That is dice. That is the history of dice.
That is how dice came to be. Stay tuned for the dirty bits because we're going to talk probably a little bit more about gambling. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this Archie Carras character that we referenced in the beginning because that's a fun journey.
And we're going to talk about the pool of blood that Baron licked up.
Oh, yeah. I, in a jury of my podcast peers, I will defend myself and my actions.
Okay. I mean, that's... don't use it all now. We're going to talk about it in Dirty Bits.
I will.
Leave them wanting. I know everyone wants to know why you licked up your roommate's leg blood.
I didn't lick it up. There was no licking. There was a spoon.
You like
it? I used a spoon.
What?
Like a civilized person. Okay? I didn't just...
That makes it worse.
I didn't just do
You're like fucking
up.
Hannibal.
I didn't just get a in lizard position on the floor and fucking lick the blood.
For years, that's what I pictured you did.
Why is that worse than a spoon?
It's more childlike. It's better than a spoon. You kind of have that infantile like curiosity when you do the push-up thing.
I have a spoon? I have standards. I have
no,
a
you
job.
Don't. You I, ladled floor goo.
I work
mystery
at a full-time
floor,
job.
And
I
it congealed
taxes.
At that point.
I pay taxes. And I participate in society.
Check out Instagram at InfoCast5000. Check out Reddit at, what was it, Baron? You're not Greg?
Not underscore really underscore Greg.
Yep, that's easy to remember.
DM
sure
me.
Will find that. DM them, DM me. You know, we like
Let's talk stocks.
All right, well,
talk
we're
going to
gonna see you
stocks.
At Dirty Bits. We are going to basically talk about Baron's poor decision.
It will be an hour of arguing back and forth, of us yelling at each other.
Bye.
My decisions. Bye.
This is fun. Bye.